Blog Talk Radio.
We'd like to welcome our listening viewers to Africa on the Move. I know today a lot of people are celebrating Easter, they're going out eating dinner and doing all those good things that people love to do as families and as human beings. But we'd like to take this time to deal with a segment of our community that is very often unappreciated and undervalued. And that particular segment of our community is the African women. So today we thought we'd take this time out to listen to our sisters. Our theme tonight is African Women Are Talking. African Women Are Talking. Well, we have invited several women to come in to get their perspectives on various issues that are confronting our community, confronting them, and to get some kind of understanding what the future is going to look like. And I'm saying that because we know that when African women speak as one voice, all things are possible. So for right now, we have with us Sister Sabrina Green. She's a representative and organizer for Friends and Family of Mumia Abu-Jamal. She'll be giving her perspectives. We'd like to encourage other women to call in and give their perspectives on whatever issues or problems that they are dealing with and how can we best help you in terms of as a community, as an African community, to overcome these obstacles. Sister Sabrina, first and foremost, I'd like to welcome you to Africa on the Move. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you so much. And also thank you for the listeners for tuning in.
Sister Sabrina, give us just a little background in terms of the makeup of who you are and some of your life experiences that you have encountered that made you the person that you are.
Okay. As far as activism, it's been since the 1980s, involved with, you know, issues about with the Ku Klux Klan. I would say that in general, from that into the 90s, late 80s and 90s, involved in ACT UP, the organization formed to counter with HIV/AIDS and get the government and the world to pay attention to the issue as so many people were dying from it. And I have to point out, come to find out later on, to find out that AIDS is a type of cancer, and such are the means of cancer outreach and work mobilization as far as getting the public interested in fundraising seemed to take from that era in the late 80s and 90s of what we were doing in street activism, getting the world's attention. And then in 95, I think it was, you know, before I'd heard about political prisoners, in 95 here in the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal, I figured it was going to be a short, quick issue for the summer. We get Mumia free off death row and, more importantly, free. And little I didn't know, the campaign to free political prisoners is one launch much long gone as those involved in all of the political prisoners movement. If people don't know, they realize it's maybe, I would say, over 120 defined, but according to, like, in the late 1990s, the Jericho movement. But there's more than what we know of what we sustain, of what are actual political prisoners. My interest at that time was Mumia Abu-Jamal, and like I said, I was thinking it was a quick action to have results within a month, a couple of months, or whatever, as what we are seeing with AIDS activism, that we were getting the results and what demands that we wanted and needed within a couple of months, maybe about a year or two. And much to my surprise, that was not the case. So, and still involved in the issue of Mumia Abu-Jamal for his freedom and as well the MOVE organization, which is like family, friend, comrades to me. So that is why my definite interest in there is involved. But what we could see, I could see at that time, is we did have a victory in 1995 because we stopped Pennsylvania State from executing Mumia, which was a planned execution date on Malcolm X's Malcolm X, Marcus Garvey's birthday, Earth Day, which the state had chose. But that galvanized people around the world. And as we saw a couple of years ago, Mumia was removed off of death row, but he is still in the belly of the beast. And for us is the concern of getting him free, because we know and have shown, illustrated the freedom that shows that he should be free. And so that's the demand. And working with other issues, obviously, on Cuba, in Venezuela, of very strong interest and such. And just recently, unfortunately, since last year, the death of Malcolm X's grandson, where some people of us, we mobilized to find and get demand answers and justice of what happened, how he was set up to be killed in Mexico. What people have heard on mainstream media is not the correct information. I would encourage them to go to the Malcolm Chavez Memorial Facebook page, which has information since May 2013 collected, and more importantly, a petition that was put in place to John Kerry to demand answers and justice and an investigation. Unfortunately, even though there's almost 4,000 signatures, we still haven't gotten any answer, reply from John Kerry, the State Department. And so hence we have a paper petition that is in place that is going to directly to Barack Obama asking for answers and justice. And just most recently, within the last month, of hearing the situation of a missing child, Relisha Rudd. The issue of missing children, sex trafficking, organ taking is a very serious issue. And I have to say it was brought to my eyes in November 2013 at a conference when it was in Prince George's County, and it was talking about in the Washington, D.C. area, primarily in the Prince George's County, of the sex trafficking that was going on with underage children. And December was a situation with D.C. police where they was found that they were involved with pornography of underage children, where some officers were charged. And those fearing charges, those officers, D.C. police, committed suicide. And then we just find this weekend that another officer committed suicide of inappropriate being charged of inappropriate activity. Now, since February has been a case of this 8-year-old missing child being in place. Some people have heard of it, about this. This is Relisha Rudd. If we want to find fault with this, there's a lot of fault that can be placed on here. First off, the D.C. police did not put in an Amber Alert despite the fact that in February 26th, people that were associated with this child, particularly one person, Khalil Tatum, and his, I will point out, his wife was found dead in Prince George's County, driving distance, I would say, maybe about like 5 or 10 minutes from the city, from D.C. It was asked about putting an Amber Alert in there for the missing girl, Relisha Rudd. And D.C. police said, no, that was not necessary, besides the situation of a person, the partner, common-law wife of Khalil Tatum being dead. Then comes later with the public outcry of how, wait a minute, why wasn't there, you know, put a priority of this missing child, and the fear of sex trafficking, and thank goodness to the people outcrying from, you know, I would say outside from the Washington, D.C. area, bringing the petition on this. And what happened is it was the Sunday of March 29th. It was a very rainy weekend of, I'm talking about 2 to 5 inches of rain. And so-called what the D.C. police said they were doing is searching this park in Kenilworth Park, Northeast, Washington, D.C. And they seized that search. And they publicly announced this all over mainstream media here in the Washington, D.C. area. And apparently they publicly announced that they were going to start their search again Monday. That would have been March 30th. Now, they also put out that there were some, you know, reward funds that were put in place by D.C. government, even Maryland as far as Prince George's, even the FBI. And even one thing that caught my attention was that they, when they were saying that they were going to have that start of that search resume on that Monday, March 30th, is that they were saying that for this Khalil Tatum, if he would come forth, he would get $20,000. I remember hearing that that morning. Well, about 1 o'clock that afternoon, I would estimate it's about 1 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 3 o'clock, definitely in the afternoon, the body of Khalil Tatum was found. Now, that was very strange to us because, okay, and interesting, the police chief said that within 36 hours, the person had to be within that park, meaning, i.e., meaning dead or whatever, you know, the time frame. So if you look at that time frame when they stopped that search and put it in place, that put a lot of questions to everybody's eyes about that. So, of course, you know, knowing the history of D.C. police, and actually I would say police in general, particularly in this situation, and the fact that even mainstream media and as well as people concerned, regardless of whether they were black or not, why was this Amber Alert not put in place in a good time factor? And that was being questioned a lot. I would like to point to people that there was video that was shown of this Khalil Tatum in a hotel with the missing child. I believe that was about March 1st, March 2nd, on a Holiday Inn Express off of New York Avenue and Bladensburg Road Northeast, which are exactly one or two blocks, short blocks, walking from a D.C. police precinct. Then also later on I found out that it was Homeland Security had an office over there, all with this, you know, taking place of a missing child, person of interest that was with her, and questionable of Amber Alert not putting in a time frame to find this child because there had been a little dog missing of a child that was white or whatever, you know, since D.C. has placed, had a very recent in years regentrification where that D.C. is no longer Chocolate City as we used to assume it in the 70s and the 80s and the 60s. It's not a majority black city. And if it had been a white child, you better believe that D.C. police and all would have responded very quite factly on there. But then, of course, with Maryland, Virginia, Delaware, it was questionable to either, you know, all police jurisdictions about why D.C. did not do what they needed to be. Now, this police chief had lied and said that, oh, well, we put a used technology to put out the alert. They only put out that alert at the end of March, 1st of April, with people's outrage about why alert was not put in place. So I wanted to stress about what is happening there with the people dissatisfied on this. The suspicion on is that Relisha Rudd could be a victim of child trafficking. And for D.C., this is not new. There was a Shamia, that a 14-year-old who was missing. She was found out in California and as a sex worker. So this is not foreign for D.C., but what happened in this situation is a question of who is the fault at here. According to mainstream media and what it looked like, it was with the mother. The mother lived in a homeless shelter in D.C., D.C. General Homeless Shelter. And what happened is apparently I can forward to what it is as of this week. Media have said that with thinking, you know, it's the fault of the mother. And, of course, it was questionable because the time frame of this child being missing from February – till March, and you might as well say April. Yes, April, because here we are now of April 20th, and the child is missing. And apparently the outcry for the alert of concern did not come from the parents. It came from with the school. And what happened with the school was apparently that the child was not with the mother, and the mother and her family were living at D.C. General Homeless Shelter. It came with the school. Apparently the school was in touch with the child's grandmother, and the child's grandmother was communicating that Dr. Tatum had the child with him, and the child, you know, being sick and was under their care. And it came out with assuming that the child was in Atlanta, and Mr. Tatum, Khalil Tatum, were in Atlanta, and that didn't seem to materialize. But what happened to find out is Mr. Tatum was a volunteer at that homeless shelter. So it came questionable about how did he get permission to have this child. Well, it was assumed that the mother gave the child to Mr. Tatum. Then come to find out at the end of this week that it was between the grandmother and the sister of the mother, which would be the aunt of Alicia Rudd, that are the ones to have gave the child to Mr. Tatum. What very quite concerning, because you've got a missing child, and now at this time frame you have two adults that had association, I would say with this Mr. Tatum, having association with the child, are dead. Two adults are dead, and the child is missing. So, of course, everybody wants to know, where is Felicia? Kind of hopeful that she is alive. But if so, it would be a hot issue with somebody to be having her in their care, especially with you're talking about D.C. government, Maryland government, Homeland Security, the FBI, supposed to be looking for her. I would like to point to people to please go to and see the information, what you can currently, I would say on this versus mainstream media, and that is a Facebook page called Find Relisha Rudd. Her name is spelled R-E-L-I-S-H-A-R-U-D-D, and that's Find Relisha Rudd Facebook to see currently what is going on, because a minister put on a blog talk show, and apparently he had the family of the missing girl to come on there, meaning her mother, her stepfather, her grandmother, her aunt, and a relative of the killed Khalil Tatum. And the nephew of Khalil Tatum that was on there said that he didn't believe that the fault was with Mr. Tatum. He would have done all that he could to find the missing child. Now, what is different from the mainstream media's reporting is that apparently, this is where I'm getting the information about the mother and the aunt of the missing girl, the grandmother and the aunt of the missing girl had a hand of giving the child to Mr. Tatum, supposedly without the mother's knowledge. But interesting, on the Facebook of the mother and the stepfather are them having lots of cash. And they try to explain that, saying that they got that from tax refund, insurance payment, and such like that. However, they've been living in this homeless shelter for 18 months. The association with Relisha and Mr. Tatum has been for 12 months. And if you listen to the blog talk show that is on the Find Relisha Rudd Facebook, apparently that the mother claimed she didn't know that Relisha was missing until she saw it on the news. But that's quite different from what she was giving interviews on mainstream news. So I'm pointing all this out here. I know it's kind of confusing to say how this is happening with this poor child, but it raises a concern because CBS showed that within D.C., Washington, D.C. is a small city, that the child of sex trafficking is not a foreign issue. Apparently, what they did on their show of talking about with sex trafficking is show that within Washington, D.C., that the industry of doing that garners 100 million that somebody is making. So my assumption of this is obviously that the police don't want to have doing what they need necessary for a missing child. This child had been possibly in another jurisdiction, maybe it would be much better, of one, of getting the Amber Alert out, and two, of finding out exactly, pinpointing what is going on here. Now, also, thank goodness, too, that helped find Relisha Rudd Facebook, is that you could see that Mr. Tatum had known Relisha's mother, and particularly the grandmother, since about 2005, 2007. And apparently that Relisha was getting sick, ill, staying at the D.C. General homeless shelter. And so that's why supposedly she was staying in the care of her grandmother. And that is where it is now. It's a he say, she say of who was actually the one to hand over the missing child to Mr. Tatum. Also, I need to point out with the school. The school was told that Mr. Tatum was a doctor, and actually he was a janitor. And so obviously that raised a concern, and it was the school that put the alert out because obviously the picture did not look correct. And that's the best I can say right as of right now. Now, people have taken on their own as far as to do a search out in the communities there in Washington, D.C., but nothing has been found out. And also, not my only reporting about the police station that are in the vicinity of the hotel where she was last seen, a video showing that she was in that hotel,
mm-hmm.
but there are cameras all over everywhere there. I mean, cameras upon cameras upon cameras there. And even at the homeless shelter where she and her family were supposed to be staying at, cameras upon cameras. And then looking, doing research with that homeless shelter, this is not the first situation they had. In 2010, they had another situation that was going on where people were accusing the workers there at the shelter adult handling or touching people wrongfully, trying to, how can I say, barter for sex and such and that going on there. So this shelter had problems. And it seems like the mayor of D.C. decided the best way to handle that was to just close the shelter entirely, move the families out there. And a lot of people say, hey, wait a minute. You're not doing that of concern of the families only because of this problem here. You're doing it because it's a high-valued land that can be easily sold for a lot of money. And so that is what I wanted to explain about with the Relisha Rudd situation. It makes an eye awareness about there is a very ugly problem of sex trafficking, pornography of underage kids. And quite clearly what we can see this here, this is a black child. This has happened to an 8-year-old black child this has happened to. And unfortunately with that blog talk show that I was talking about that is under that Facebook page of Find Relisha Rudd is that there was also another situation with this family. The mother got frustrated and because the people asked some questions and said, so why were they blaming her? And excuse me, she's supposed to be out there concerned about her little, 8-year-old missing girl, understanding she has 4 little boys. But she screamed out in anger, why were they not going after her sister Ashley Young, who's had a 7-year-old named Tatiana missing since last year. So this exposed a very ugly, more uglier picture here. This family has had at least 2 children missing as we're talking about this time frame day. And unfortunately, with this Tatiana, there's been no concern of finding her. The mother has not communicated that she's missing or anything of concern. And instead of counting her sister and saying that's not true or denying it and saying that the child is such and such here, so she's not missing, she didn't say anything. As her sister communicated that the child may be possibly dead. She didn't know, she hadn't done anything for a year to find out where this 7-year-old daughter of hers is. which would be the cousin of the missing Relisha Rudd. Horrifying. I mean, it's just horrifying even just gathering and saying this. And I know I'm trying to explain this in the little time that we have, but again, I would encourage people to go to Relisha, find Relisha Rudd Facebook, Google her name. I know that there's a Kwasi Saito who is frustrated with the officials in D.C. Government, particularly D.C. police, and has a petition to have the police chief, Lanier, removed. Now, I need to point out that the police chief is a white woman. The woman that's in charge of the review of the school board is a white woman, I believe, as far as the review of the shelter that is in place that had this mishaps at D.C. General. Apparently it came out she never visited that that homeless shelter, and it suggested that she did. And I believe this person is white as well, too. So it shows something here. Unfortunately, as far as what used to be a majority black city, when it comes to the black children, particularly black females, young underage females, it is not of a concern. It is not of a concern, which is too sad to see here. I would also like to communicate to people that have children, even those not having children. Two people that I, when it comes to, when we're talking about dealing with families and children and what we're facing in the community, have as voluntarily given, you know, their words and having events around the country. That is Professor Griff, who has lectures that speaks about, you know, of the community, the black community, the you know, what is happening, also what is, you know, with hip-hop, the music industry, the Illuminati, which he's done for years. Ex-minister Prof. Griff, Facebook, and, you know, to keep touch as far as for lectures and that, and I strongly feel this is needed for the black community. If you can't, you know, you can't make it to his lectures, YouTube them and get the information. Another person is Dr. Umar Johnson, who is the relative of Frederick Douglass, who is in trying to put in place a school, an independent school for children, especially those that are the children and their families that are accused of having autism, and the school system is saying that they have to take some type of medicine or whatever, which we find that causes complications, ADHD, ADHD and such like that. You know, school systems that's saying that for children to be in their systems, the parents have to agree to go take that and be certified of that. What he's found out in the lectures and what he's been re-educating is that this is the means of that schools can get money off of the children of those that are special interest, meaning, you know, having medical concerns, mental concerns, as they try to portray it as. Of course, you know, he has a Facebook, Dr. Umar Itafunde, but if you just Google Dr. Umar Johnson Facebook, it'll pop up. And he wants to put an independent school in the shape of the continent Africa in place, and people are leaping for joy for this, meaning children and their parents and other people as well, because this is much needed. And so I guess I pretty much can stop it right there about what entailed there. But out of this, I would say strongly, it is a very awful situation what is happening now and that. And the last thing here with this week, April 24th, is Mumia's 60th birthday. So in Philadelphia will be a large celebration from the 24th, 25th, and 26th. Please go to the website, Facebook page, Bring Mumia Home, and you'll see the information that is planned there.
Sabrina, you eloquently spoken to the issue of the realities of what is going on in our community. As an African woman, how would you critique how African women as of today begin to look at this whole question of this concept of family as an institution? I know this from your passion in terms of describing some of the issues that are going on in your community. It seems like you really are committed to that. How you found these kind of trends to be among most of our young sisters, as well as elder sisters today. Because at the present time, it seems like we have lost control, total control of our youth today. And there seems to be a me thing and not a we thing. What's your take on that?
I totally agree. And for the sake of time, that's why I gave the Dr. Umar Johnson and Professor Griff, because they have, I'm going to say for decades, have pointed this issue out and said what needs to be done and have gave the intellectual tools through YouTube, CDs, DVDs, and lectures and such to communicate that. And so I strongly urge, you know, for parents, children, young adults to please visit and take these tools because it's much needed. I'm in Baltimore City, and I can see with our urban cities, particularly in Baltimore, it's past needed. There is some community that adopts and is trying to use the tools that I've mentioned here. Interesting enough, Dr. Umar Johnson and Professor Griff have been to Washington, D.C. and Baltimore numerous times, as well as other major cities as well. But unfortunately, I'd have to say we are, out of the whole United States, Babylon here, of those people of conscience, we are the smaller number of here in Babylon. So we have a critical need to adjust here. For as we know, Professor Griff is a member of Public Enemy. Look how long in place Public Enemy has been in place and within music have been trying to put in place with what was turned rap and what is now hip-hop and what the music industry has turned into. And when Griff was doing this in the 1990s and 2000, you know, people were not latching on to what he was trying to do there, expose to what was happening with our community and with our music. A lot of people didn't want to believe in what the Illuminati is now, right now, here this 2014. They're quite clearly seeing it. It's turned to be a fashion in place thing to say of what the harm of capitalism is taking place. And not only in this country, but around the world, you know. You and I both have been to Venezuela. You've been to Cuba. I haven't been to Cuba. They don't have it as means as what we have. That was because, unfortunately, in Venezuela, they had Hugo Chavez, who took their population of African and indigenous, moved them from in the 2000s to now to uplift them to where their communities have things in place. While unfortunate here in Babylon, we are going backwards. We're lacking of that. And it, unfortunately, you know, it's what I did. What I'm looking at now when I see the Washington, D.C., unfortunately, is Sodom and Gomorrah. What are the terms in the Bible? Sodom and Gomorrah.
Mm-hmm.
Is basically what it's turning into, and not only in that city, but other cities, is, you know, this wickedness. But, you know, what we have to do is we have to look at this as not just, okay, only just our community, our little village here. We have to not use it in thinking of just of our only, you know, our within our circle, because what is outside our circles affects what is in our circle. And so it's unbelievable to me, and I just could not believe that in Washington, D.C., here this child is missing. People that would, you know, years ago we would respond to that and take out and look and search. Like for Baltimore, we had a Felicia Barnes that was missing from North Carolina. And my good comrade, Darren Muhammad, who has a talk show here, seized upon himself, despite the fact it was a bitterly cold winter, and mobilized people to get out there and search for that little girl and to keep the attention on finding that girl until she was found, unfortunately, outside of the Baltimore area. And the situation, you know, goes on with that. But we have a terrible problem here, you know. The prostitution used to be of age. Now this is where they're wanting of underage. And so this, we need to put a limit to that, because we can't just look at it as somebody else's problem, because who knows, it could be our family, our relative.
I totally, highly agree with you. I also wonder, in terms of listening to some of the issues that you have raised tonight with us, speaking from a women's perspective, and particularly for experiences of being African women, one of the things I would like you to address is there a direct communication link between sisters to sisters, where you feel like when you travel, we're in these inner cities, where we are really, really talking to each other, or is it a total disconnect in terms of the very little communication going on among the women in our community? Because, you know, when we start having problems, particularly among our women, family, all kinds of things begin to go haywire. And there seems like to be that there's an intentional target on African women to create this confusion. Because I don't know if a lot of people realize it, that the last 3 to 5 years, in terms of the incarceration rate that is taking place in the African community here, you are now having more African women going to jail than men. I don't know if people
will. Yeah, that's been a problem since the 1990s that we have seen that trend. And we got to keep in mind, like, we had that took place, the Million Women's March, with Sister Follet is still involved doing that work of that, of being, you know, that communication of sister to sister communication, and trying to expose these type of problems and such. So that is in place. It has not disappeared. That is in place. And you know Sister Follet. And I'm sure there are other means as well, too. But unfortunately, you know, we are going to have to utilize, unless here we come, a couple of years, and things get far even worse than what it can be. I can't even imagine anything being worse than what it is now. And I'm sure there are some things that are uplifting, like we have the Watutu on the Nile in Baltimore. These are some youth girls that mobilize hip-hop to speak their message of teenage girls. And, oh, excuse me, there is a child that's elementary age that's involved in there that speaks a message of positive of what they would like to see in their age group and in place, and doing that re-education for not only just children, but adults as far as with rap. So, you know, there are means that are in place. There's Sister Zaza Ali that is on the West Coast. She is working with schools, and she's also the partner on Professor Griff's show about positive issues and that, which explore into that. So, yes, we have to explore into this, but we have to really, really arm ourselves, re-educate ourselves. And that's why in the beginning of the show I pointed out Dr. Umar Johnson and Professor Griff, who are doing that re-education and that outreach. And it is taking largely on with them, because people around the world want to hear them, want to hear this, take that re-education and give it to others. And as I just said, and I said earlier, now Dr. Umar Johnson, he has the credentials in place, and now he's putting an independent school for children. I believe that's to take place up in Philadelphia. I may be wrong, but he's looking at more than one school to be put in place independently for African children. And again, I'll give out their Facebook again, Dr. Umar Johnson, Dr. Umar Itafunde Johnson, Facebook Johnson, ex-minister Prof. Griff, Facebook. And again, the issue I talked about, finding Relisha Rudd, is Find Relisha Rudd Facebook. And of course, as we move into Mumia's birthday, which is going on a lot of activity because he turned 60 this year, and it is the issue of getting him free, and that's Bring Mumia Home Facebook and website.
Okay, we have a caller on the line. Caller, phone, last four numbers is 6029. 6029, question or comment? As relates to that theme,
yeah.
Women are talking, and what you haven't heard so far.
I'm enjoying what I'm hearing. But let me just pose a question to the sister. And one of the things she alluded to the unraveling of the global economic system and its impact, particularly on the African community. My concern is that given this reality, then we can anticipate the level of corruption, the level of intolerance, and the level of hatred is going to escalate. And my simple question to her is, given this reality, what can we concretely do in terms of combating these problems, particularly global system as an impact on our people?
I would say the re-education of people, because everybody, when they assume such as the issues which you bring up, they assume something different of how it should be handled with. For example, like a good example where everybody is having outrage is drinking the Kool-Aid with Al Sharpton, and they assumed him to be the leader, to lead the people. And then, of course, to find out that, he had some some misforgivings on with him. And so people are shocked about it. But we've known that all along as well. I'm quite sure you both have known as well, too. And so we can't follow the leader. We have to have that re-education so we can communicate that to our people, meaning our loved ones, our community, of how to react and to rebuild. For example, if we look at with Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, with how they had dealt with the 80s and the 90s of oligarchy and the people being without even the majority black country without any type of representation of themselves and their way of life, living, their government, and everything. It took for him to be in place with the revolution that was taking place of those fighting before, because it just didn't start with only with Hugo Chavez, but those fighting before, to get in place. And what he did was remove, tackle, and put in place what helped the majority of the black community there, and for them to be recognized as Afro-descendants and move forward. And likely we would like to have that seen here, but we have missed that boat on that. As I say that's my own personal view. We have missed that boat on that because a lot of us, like when we saw the killing of the murder of Chavez, and I call it that, he was healthy, and when he came back from Cuba, somehow he wound up dead, and that was not just from illness. That happened from corruption put in place to make sure he was killed. And we've got to do that. Well, just like what happened with Libya. Libya was a place that you could go to school free and everything well taken care of, just like it was with Venezuela, and that was demolished. And Gaddafi was killed, despite with how he was willing to help the black community. One thing I have to point out, if I have to put out this re-education about what happened to Malcolm X's grandson, the same way he was set up to be killed, like his grandfather, is what happened to the grandson. And ugly situation. This makes May 9th, makes 1 year of him being murdered. And we have a petition that is in place, but for more information of finding out what's happened there and what we've been able to pull up, please go to Malcolm Chavez Memorial Facebook page to get that information.
Okay, I'm going to tell a caller. I'll put him on hold for a second. But we'd like to alert our listening audience that we're going to go over. And if you do not hear the entirety of this program, you always can go to our archive at www.blogtalkradio.com/Africa-on-the-move. We have some other callers been on the line waiting, and when I call up the last four numbers, if you have a question or comment, please do so. We are discussing with Sabrina Green as she speaks to her realities and looking at what's going on today from an African woman perspective. We have caller, your last four number, 8488. Caller, 8488. Do you have any question or comment, please? Welcome to Africa on the Move, caller, 8488. Call 8488. Any questions or comments? Okay, let's try to go to caller 0247. Caller 0247? Caller 0247.
Yes.
You're on Africa on the Move. Question or comments?
Okay, peace.
Go ahead.
Peace, brother. How you doing?
Peace. How you doing, sister? Good, good.
Good. I'm glad to hear the sister bringing the information out of Baltimore City and Washington, D.C. I'm calling from Richmond, and unfortunately some of the same things are happening here as far as the sex trafficking. They've been talking about it for the last couple of months, and I just would like to say that we just have to be very diligent about our children because they're the most precious thing that we have. They're our future, they're our present, they're our everything, and it's just sad that, you know, the society has people living in a place like D.C. General. I'm very familiar. I used to work up in Washington, and it's just not the best situation, and people have talked about how they want to take that land and, you know, because it's valuable land and do something else with it because they're not concerned about us. They're not concerned about our children. The schools are not concerned about educating our children, and it's wonderful that Professor Griff, Brother Johnson, at Toronto Independent Schools. This is something that's really, really needed. So I just want to thank the sisters for bringing that information to us because, like she said, we do need education. And as black women, we definitely have a role in the society of educating our children, educating our friends, educating our relatives and those that are around us because that is, you know, our responsibility. So I just want to say thank you to the sister again and peace.
Caller, don't hang up. I have a question I'd like to ask you as an African woman.
Yes.
Can you speak to this issue of this dysfunctioning relationship that seems to be going on within our community between the brothers and the sisters? What are some of the contributing factors that has caused these relationships to be very dysfunctional in terms of allowing all this chaos to take place? And how do we get things back in line so we can start controlling our kids and having respect for one another and not be treated like them scum? What's your take on that? How do we deal with that?
Well, I think that the dysfunction started on the boat. You know, when they had us on that boat and the slave ship on the hull of the boat, you know, everything was off balance. It just continued on. You know, when we reached land and they put slaves, they put chains around our necks and separated, you know, the children from the families, the husbands from the wives, the relatives and everything else. It's just been a continual process of genocide of the mind. So we never really recovered from all of that. So now we have a situation where a lot of times, you know, in the family, you know, black women traditionally have been had more access to education than the men, and that means that in the family setup, the woman oftentimes is making more money than a man, or she may have a job and the man don't have a job. So how's that going to produce harmony between a man and a woman? That's not a situation. And then we just have all these stereotypes. You know, we have the media that projects the strong black woman and a lot of times the weak black men. I don't really have an answer to how all of that can come together. Honestly, you know, we just have to, you know, as an individual, we have to focus on being positive as a black woman, I have to be positive towards the brothers, and on the other hand, the black man has to be positive towards me, you know, because we as individuals make up a community. We just have to have more patience with each other. We have to have more respect for each other. We have to have more love for each other, you know, and this will bring us back together, really, is those simple things, you know, and we have to stop being, we have to stop judging each other based on this European materialism mindset. You know, you meet a brother, you meet a sister, and then you say, well, what kind of work do you do? And then you start calculating in your mind how much money they may have and maybe how much money they got in the bank, what kind of car they got, what kind of clothes. That doesn't make an individual. That doesn't make a human being. That doesn't, you can't judge a person's character based on those things. You have to look within. You have to look within yourself, and then you have to look within that individual.
Let me put this one more question out to you and the rest of my audience, and we'd like to hear the audience response as well as my guests. But right now, it seems to you say you're from Richmond, calling from Richmond, Virginia. There's something about Richmond, and there seems to be some kind of confusion among your African male in terms of his loyalty, in terms of who he's willing to serve. For example, I understand he want to invest money in building a baseball stadium, but they can find money to invest in fixing up schools and doing the kind of things that the kids need in the city to be able to function. Recently, I think in the elementary school, Fairfield Court, they had ceiling falling out. And they've been knowing about this problem for a long time, but there was no concern. But at the same time, he will invest into a city stadium somewhere downtown, Chaco Slip, at an African burial. What's really going on with y'all city mayor, and how do you deal with this when he's of the African community, quote unquote? How do you address that question, the issue?
Would you repeat that question, Tom, brother?
How do you address the issue that you have an African male? He seems to have a loyalty to other people outside of the community that he comes from. For example, we see that he's investing money into projects to make other communities wealthy, i.e. the Chaco Slip. But at the same time, he don't have the same kind of zeal to invest money in the infrastructure into the public school system that would benefit the majority of kids, our African kids. How do you deal with a situation like that? We have people who look like you, but they're not serving the interests of the particular community. What is the people saying in Richmond about that?
My reception is really, really bad. But I heard those words, loyalty. Did you mention loyalty to the community?
You can say loyalty to the community, or at least the interest to the African community. If you have an African male, how do y'all view his policies as relates to when you allocate funds into communities that already have money, and those that need the money, he doesn't express an interest in terms of developing these kind of communities, i.e. like the public school system. There's not a lot of money given to the public schools, but yet the public schools need money in Richmond public school system. That's my understanding of some of the issues that's going on in Richmond. I want to know what is your take of the performance of your African male right now as relates to these issues.
Well, you know, we have that same type of problem here in Baltimore with a female mayor, and we address that, we expose that, you know, and like my good friend Darren Conrad is one that says, you know, make the demands of the mayor, the governor, and the city council of that. And, of course, that person now, if it is possible, they need to be reeducated. Such as we said, what I said earlier with Dr. Umar Johnson, and also with the sister was bringing up about with concerns and issues with that they readjust about. Hello?
Yeah, we see you here. We listen to you.
Yeah, that they that he gives that re-education on there, that readjustment now, but it's up for the person if they're going to take that and be re-educated. If not, then we let that person alone and move on. Now, if they're in a position of leadership, then, of course, you need to do and demand all that you can, and if possible, to have that person removed.
All right, we have caller 6029. Matter of fact, I believe this is another Richmond caller. We were speaking about your mayor. What's your take on the mayor's performance and policies as relates to the development we're in the city of Richmond?
I think underscored exactly what the problem is. That's mainly the question of class. I think one of the things that when we talk about miseducation, we have to understand, irrespective of education level, there's a tremendous amount of ignorance as it relates to a lot of our people. And when you look at terms of the representation in terms of our community, in terms of, you know, black folks in power, or at least positions of power, that the kind of policies they execute are never geared toward empowering the masses of folks. And so therefore we have to ask the question, are these people in power to help us, are they empowered to ingratiate themselves? So I think it's very, very clear in terms of, you know, the kind of policy they do with that they're very cognizant of the fact that in order to maintain that status, to make money, is that you must serve the interests of people other than those in your community. And so this class issue is something that we have to understand, I'd be very, very cognizant of. I think that if we're sincere in terms of bringing about change or even struggling in society, then we have to understand that it's coming upon us who are conscious, those among us who are willing to make a sacrifice or bring about change. Otherwise, if we sit by thinking that somehow, you know, these people, you know, positions of quote-unquote formal authority are going to pursue our interests, then we're sadly mistaken. So it's coming upon us as a people to deal with the issue. So what the mayor is doing is what it expected him to do. It is serve the interest of those in power.
Okay, point where I'm saying, let's give this caller another chance. We're going back to caller 8488, see if they have anything we would like to contribute to the discussion. Caller 8488, welcome to Africa on the Move. Any questions or comments? I guess my caller just want to listen. No questions. Okay, let's continue. Sister Sabrina?
Yes.
We know that Mumia Abu-Jamal, that we're having a celebration coming up, I believe, on the 26th of this month. We know that
The 24th, 25th, and 26th of April. 26th,
correct.
24th, 25th, and 26th.
Okay. We know that's a concern, woman, African woman. How do you really view this whole scenario? Of this dynamic scenario around his whole case as relates to African community. Why can't we get more support from the African community in terms of...
Actually, we have the support, we have the sympathy. What we need to do is have the action. I always have said for years, if Mumia had been in California, any other state, the one that was not prejudiced against him and the MOVE organization, he would have been out because his case is very similar to that of Geronimo Gijaga. And Geronimo, what had happened was he got the case before a judge that was a fair judge that could see, and surprisingly enough, this was a Republican judge that allowed to be presented on court record the evidence that showed he was innocent for him to get parole and finally get released and finally to sue the government to get repatriated for the time that he was in. So I was for that. Now, what happened in 1997,2007, when there came the evidential hearings before Judge Sable that took place as far as 95 to 2007, A federal witness came for a hearing on this Pamela Jenkins. Pamela Jenkins is very interesting here. What happened is she got presented in court. If it had been any other court than Judge Sable, that would have been the get-out-of-jail card for Mumia. What is important and interesting of her is that she was a federal witness for a sting that was done on what was termed the 39th Precinct, in Philadelphia, where it was found out 3,000 people were convicted unjustly, unfairly, in their precinct. in Philadelphia. That was also the precinct that Mumia was at. And what the federal government did was they did not include Mumia's case. And so the get-out-of-jail card was for 3,000 other people other than Mumia. And again, it was found where Pamela Jenkins was, presented her for evidence. Judge Sabo, being that he was one that advocated from with the FOP, the Fraternal Order of Police, refused that evidence to be presented, where she saw and could, and as a witness could see that the prime person, Cynthia White, who had went with the police side and said that Mumia was guilty and was did the shooting, even though she was nowhere near on the scene where she could see Mumia at. And this Pamela Jenkins knew that when she was in a cell with this Cynthia White, that Cynthia White had told her that the police had set her up to lie on Mumia, to frame up Mumia. So that was the evidence that was being presented in 2007. And even what was also important was that time was a couple of months before that hearing, she had seen Cynthia White in the company of police. And now when I say the police at this time, now quite interesting, I'm talking about the sex trafficking. The situation that was going with Mumia being incarcerated was pretty much the same situation, except it wasn't called that. Apparently you had high school girls that became girlfriends of police, the cops there, and the cops, instead of, you know, okay, that's the girlfriend or whatever, put those girls out to work on the street. Pedophiles. And so this is what happened with the girl that framed up Mumia, Cynthia White, and she was a high school person, girlfriend of a cop, put out to work the street. That was what happened with Veronica Jones. That's what happened with Pamela Jenkins, except Pamela Jenkins became a federal witness when it came to the sting of exposing about with dirty cops that had 3,000 people released. And so Pamela Jenkins said a couple of months before that hearing took place in June 2007 that she saw Cynthia White in the company of those cops that were involved in that frame-up of Mumia, some of those that were involved. Well, Judge Sabourn, wanting to hear that, declared Cynthia White dead because they had one police officer take the stand on that hearing and said, Cynthia White, a.k.a. Cynthia Williams, is dead, and we only have proof of one thumbprint. Judge Sabourn, that's good enough for him? Good enough for him? Declared her dead. And we all knew at that time of that hearing, well, if she wasn't dead then, she certainly was then now, because she was no good for the cops being alive. That's just one person I've always said all along through the years have said. And over the years, we lost communication with Pamela Jenkins, because that evidence, if she was good enough for a federal sting to have 3,000 people released out of the dungeon, it should have been certainly good enough for her with Mumia's case. But there's been a lot of evidence that shows the pictures of the scene when Mumia was arrested and Faulkner was shot, and you know, the way the gun was misplaced and mishandled by police and such like that. The police know Mumia didn't have anything to do with the shooting. They know that. But, however, they wanted Mumia in jail because he's advocating against police brutality in the case of the MOVE organization, the countless beatings that they were sustaining, and reporting about police injustice that was taking place. And, in fact, what happened was that the police had set up a situation to have Faulkner killed, the officer that Mumia is accused of killing, because Faulkner was coming out, prepared to come out and go against and talk against the dirty police. So they had set up for that. And we found that from later years on from people that lived in Philadelphia that knew of that. Now, that is what has to be, that evidence has to be presented. But we all know Mumia is innocent, just as the MOVE 9, who have been in prison since 1978, are innocent. The MOVE 9 had been in prison because the judge at that time said he wanted to sentence them as a family. One bullet being fired to kill a police officer, so he wants to sentence all 9 members of the MOVE organization.
well said, Sabrina. We're running out of time. Let my listening audience, 6029, maybe make a final comment, and then, Sabrina, I want you to make your final comment in terms of what you would like to share with our community in terms of your last thoughts as an African woman. Caller 6029, any final comments or thoughts for tonight, for tonight's program?
Yeah, real succinctly, I think that if we think that the situation for our people are problematic now, you wait with the expansion of the global economy, then it's really going to get crazy. I think there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes which our people are not cognizant of and they don't understand. I would implore people to understand as much as you possibly can about the economics and understand, you know, the kind of things that are going behind the scenes that can lead to the destruction of this economy, which means it's going to lead to devastation in the African community. So I implore people to learn as much economics as possible.
Thank you, caller. Sabrina, you found a statement to the community.
I pretty much in this time frame gave all the resources out, and where I would say people that want to be re-educated and in action to mobilize and get involved. And more importantly, we need signatures to expose about the unjust killing of Malcolm X's grandson. Come on, people. We cannot let this go. Please, the memorial, the Facebook is Malcolm Shabazz Memorial Facebook. Malcolm Shabazz Memorial Facebook. See the link there where you can sign the petition to carry. We need as many signatures as possible to expose on that. Thank you so much.
Okay, and before we leave out, I would like to also share with the audience on behalf of Africa on the Move that every year we have this great institution that we call African Liberation Day. It's coming up this year on May the 17th at the Festival Center, Northwest D.C. That's May the 17th at Festival Center, Northwest D.C. from 3:30 to 8:30. We'd like to encourage our audience to make sure if you can, come on up to D.C., come home, so we can connect our struggles together because they are one, and help our mother Africa and our brothers and sisters throughout the world to get together and let's put an end to the global oppression that our people face on a daily basis, such as some of the oppression that you just witnessed tonight through the presentation of our sister Sabrina Green. Until next time, we'd like to thank you for allowing us to come into your homes tonight. And remember, you can always catch Africa on the Move every other Sunday at 6 p.m. And you always can go to our archives and view all the shows that we have done by logging in at www.blogtalkradio.com/Africa-on-the-move. Until next time, remember, we always speak truth to power and want to give you information, because we know without information you cannot think. And we also would like to encourage you to join the organization, because the weapon for the oppressed people is organization. Again, we thank you, and we'll see you same time, same place. Africa on the Move.